I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There. This is a podcast about the outdoors, from your window box and garden, to the fields on the edge of town, to the forests, prairies, seashores, and wilderness. On the show, we explore our relationship with nature through stories, interviews, essays, and even some fiction. We travel around the U.S. and the world with tales of love and heartbreak, passion and adversity, desperation and triumph. When you see someone in a wheelchair, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Do you pity them? Do you count your blessings that you're not in their position? Do you offer to help them? Or do you think to yourself, I wonder if this person races marathons? I'll be honest, marathon racing was never something that crossed my mind when I saw someone with a disability. That is, until I met Sherry Blauwet. Sherry is 30-something and slender, with gentle eyes and a winning smile. And yes, she's in a wheelchair. She's also won some of the country's most competitive marathons, and she's come home with several medals, including a gold, in the Paralympics. In case you're not familiar with the Paralympics, they're international athletic games, like the Olympics, but for people with disabilities.
And occur in parallel. The para is actually meant to mean parallel, not paraplegic. And so it's the pinnacle of sport for athletes with disabilities across the world.
I sat down with Sherry to talk about what it was like becoming a world-class athlete when you have a disability like hers, a disability that would stop many of us from pursuing any kind of significant outdoor activities. Sherry grew up in rural Iowa. When she was 16 months old, she was in a farming accident, which left her with a spinal cord injury.
Because of that, my memories as far back as they go are of being a wheelchair user and a person with a disability. So it's kind of similar to many others who are born with a disability, because that's the only way I've ever known myself.
As a kid, it never occurred to Sherry to do sports. Like many people with disabilities, she assumed athletics weren't an option for her. Instead, she focused on the things she knew she could excel at, things like music and art, student council. But then, one day, things changed.
A little bit later on, I was actually in about eighth grade, and our high school track coach noticed that there was a wheelchair racing exhibition event at the state track meet.
Hold on, you heard that right. A wheelchair racing event. Wheelchair racing is just what it sounds like. You race in wheelchairs.
It's really the equivalent to running for athletes with disabilities. And any event in which you see someone running, there's an equivalent in the sport of wheelchair racing. So anything from the 100 meter on the track to marathons.
So the track coach at Sherry's school saw that there was this wheelchair racing event at the state track meet.
And he came back to school and told me about it. And, by then I was already pretty busy and doing a lot of things and had a lot on my plate. And for that reason, and because I had never thought about engaging in sports, I initially blew him off. But he was pretty persistent. And after about a year, so when I was then in my freshman year of high school, I gave it a shot almost just to sort of appease him and appease all the people who were wanting me to do it, just to show him, well, fine, I'll give it a try. Like, leave me alone.
But really, when he first brought this up, mm-hmm. was there a piece of you that was really excited and said, oh, this could be for me, and you just didn't want to show that? Or were you actually not interested?
I was actually not interested. And, I was a young teenager, and to me it was just another thing that would make me stand out and not really blend in with the crowd, which is what most teenagers want to do. And even when I first got involved, I didn't, glean onto it immediately or, in that first time on the track, I didn't say, oh, my gosh, this is the best thing I've ever done. It was still honestly not that much fun initially, and that's because I was still the only kid around doing it, and I was doing it differently. So, it was still quite isolating, actually.
So you said that first time that out on the track, it wasn't that great an experience.
Yeah, no, it really wasn't. When I first went out for the team, I actually didn't have a racing chair yet, so I just pushed around in my what I call my everyday chair, which is just the chair I use for everything. And of course, you know, everyday chairs aren't made to go fast. They're meant to, you know, be practical in small, cramped environments and being able to turn on a dime and that kind of thing. So, of course, it wasn't that fast initially.
Wasn't that fast and wasn't much fun. It wasn't until later that Sherry learned she could get a special kind of wheelchair made specifically for racing. A racing wheelchair.
It's a three-wheeled chair that has one wheel very far out front.
Kind of like a tricycle, except built to go super fast.
And you sit in it in a very athletic position, so you tuck your feet up under you and lean forward with your trunk so that you're almost parallel to the ground. It's amazingly liberating, and it goes really fast.
So do athletes geek out over racing wheelchairs the same way like a cyclist might geek out over bikes?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. I mean, there's been everything from people, you know, there's been people who've tried different materials, for example. I know one guy from Australia who like handmade one with his buddy that's made out of carbon fiber, and it looks like this like bullet thing. And everyone, you know, he shows up. I don't know that it actually goes any faster, but he shows up with it, and it always gets a lot of oohs and ahs. And
it looks faster.
It looks like it must be faster, right? Because it looks higher tech. But and then we also geek out a lot about just all the components, and so similar to a cyclist. So what kind of tires are you using, and what pressure are you running, and those kinds of things are always a big. Big discussion piece at any event.
Okay, so back to Sherry's high school days. She joins the track team. At first, she just has her normal everyday wheelchair, and it's not much fun. Eventually, she finds a racing wheelchair she can rent, but it's five sizes too big for her.
It'd be like a runner wearing shoes that are five sizes too big. Like, obviously, you're not going to go very far very fast. But we didn't know any better. And so I had that first chair that at least was something, but it certainly wasn't very agile wasn't going to enable me to win any races.
So at first, when you were a member of your track team at school, what was that like? Because obviously you're the only person in a wheelchair there. Everyone else is running on foot. Were people inclusive toward you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, they were and they weren't. I think that no one was blatantly exclusive, I guess you could say. But I think that just by the nature of it, it wasn't a very inclusive or integrated experience. It wasn't that I felt, you know, segregated or relegated to the sidelines or not a part of the team. I definitely felt like part of the team. But when you're the only one in these certain events, it's kind of difficult to really feel like you're just one of the crowd. Because, you know, we would go to these regional meets and there would be on the docket a 100-meter and 400-meter wheelchair event. But it was pretty obvious that I was going to be the only one in that event. And I'd line up on the start line and the gun would go off and I would race myself down the straightaway of the track towards the finish in front of like a grandstand of people, really just racing the clock because no one else was in the event. And it, you know, to a freshman in high school, like what freshman in high school do you know that would enjoy that? It wasn't that much fun. You know, you're like standing out and running a race and everyone's staring at you and it's not really a race. It's a race against yourself per se, but not really. And so until that changed, I don't think I ever would have really felt, you know, a full-fledged member of the team.
So what was the first time that you actually went to a wheelchair racing event and were around other wheelchair racers?
Mm-hmm. So the first time was at the end of that season, that first season of track. So I had kind of honestly endured that whole first season in our small town in Northwest Iowa. I acquired that chair that didn't fit well, but at least I had it. But I was still the only wheelchair racer. And so so I still wasn't honestly enjoying it that much. But everything changed pretty quickly one day when we went down to that state track meet and planned on competing in that event that my coach had seen the year before. And when we got there, we realized that we met several people that really kind of changed the game for me, and a lot of it was around the fact that there were other high school-aged girls who were there who had racing chairs, and they were great, and they were very open and friendly, which was awesome. And I think instantly, even though I didn't quite know them very well yet, just being around those other teenage girls who were into this and who had so much in common with me was really, really exciting. And that was really a huge hook to get me involved towards wanting to do it more. And initially, I think as with most kids, you know, the hook wasn't, oh, I want to be the best athlete in the world. The hook was, I really like these people and I want to hang out with them more, my peers. And then also joining them was a coach who coached a community-based wheelchair racing team. And so they practiced in Des Moines, which was actually quite a distance from where I grew up. It's about a four-hour drive. But it was there. So once I met the folks involved with that team, then I knew I wanted to be a part of it.
So how did you go from being someone who played sports and enjoyed it for the company almost to being an athlete?
Yeah. So that was kind of another turning point. I started through the high school years to, you know, understand that I was pretty good at this, not the best, but decent at it. And then the summer between my junior and senior year, they had arranged so that at the end of the track meet, they were going to select kind of a junior development team of five guys and five girls. And I had heard about that, but never, I knew a lot of people who I thought were talented athletes, so I never thought that I would be one of them. And then, but I had a pretty good meet, and at the end of that meet, I was. So they announced the team, and they listed my name, and I was really surprised. But went with it, right? You know, it was a huge honor, obviously. And part of that experience was that we were able to spend a week at the Olympic Training Center in Chula Vista, California, with access to some of the national team coaches and obviously just access to that environment, which is incredibly inspiring for a young athlete. And from then on out, I certainly changed. I changed my own mindset to kind of being in it to win it.
So getting to that point where you're in it to win it, were you pursuing being a pro athlete because you really loved racing, or did you somehow have something that you wanted to prove to yourself, to the rest of the world, that your disability wasn't keeping you back?
Good question. Well, you know, I think by that point, actually, I was in it to win it because I found my competitive edge. And so certainly underpinning everything was always that chance to kind of prove something to the broader public, to my family, friends, but also other people in the public. And I always loved that, and I loved the way in which what I was doing was very, very stereotype breaking. So that was a huge part of it. But honestly, at the end of the day, like when I would go to races or think about my competitive schedule for the year, the biggest priority by that time was that I wanted to perform as best as I possibly could and win.
And Sherry certainly did win. She won a silver and three bronze medals at the Paralympic Games in Sydney in 2000, and a gold and two bronze medals at the 2004 Games in Athens. And she started racing marathons, the New York City Marathon, the Boston Marathon, the Los Angeles Marathon. These are some of the nation's most competitive races. Again and again, she came home with gold medals. To be clear, in the marathons, she was competing against other wheelchair racers, not against runners. There's an elite runner division and an elite wheelchair division in most of these races.
Usually the wheelchair racers start first because we're on wheels, we cover the course faster than a runner. And when you finish and, you know, you have your rankings, then typically when they talk about the winners of the race, there's the, you know, first and second place male-female runner and first and second place male-female wheelchair racer.
So how fast can you go in your wheelchair?
Well, it depends on the race conditions and the wind and the road surface. But an average for a female wheelchair racer, probably in the range of about 18 miles an hour. And I think my max speed coasting was around 35 miles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, which is terrifying, actually. And something that, you know, obviously a huge thrill. And, you know, thankfully that would always be for, you know, you'd be on a typical race course. Boston's actually a great example of it because it has a lot of really, really fast coasting sections. And there's one downhill section at mile 16 or so that we get really, really fast. And it's only for about a half mile. But in that half mile, women are going around 35, men are going over 40. And that's quite a rush when your head is like 3 feet from the pavement and you're wearing a little helmet and you're in this little rickety piece of aluminum.
Once you started wheelchair racing and you first felt this thrill of coasting downhill really fast, did that become sort of a thrill that you have sought out ever since? I mean, is that kind of a...
Yeah, no, it's really fun. It's really fun. And wheelchair racing is a sport in which once you get good, you know, as with any sport, it takes a little while to acquire the skill. And then once you get really good at it, there's such a freedom to it. And I think especially for people who... in the background, just in their day-to-day life, sometimes feel defined by being mobility, quote-unquote, impaired, or having limited mobility for whatever reason. Being able to get in a chair and have that freedom of movement is really powerful and really addicting, and that's why people, once they get into it, they love it, and they can't not do it.
So this is all, wheelchair racing is all about arm strength, it seems like. Do you have, like, the most amazing arms?
Yeah, well, they were always fairly strong. Yeah, it's arms and it's also upper back and upper chest. So, like, you use a lot of pec, you use a lot of upper trap, and your lats, for example. So you really are able to recruit a lot of upper body musculature, but your arms are definitely the workhorse of the whole operation. And yeah, it's amazing. You get pretty strong pretty quick.
So there's this public perception that people with disabilities can't really get outside, can't do active things outdoors. You've obviously proven that wrong in a very impressive way. What did your athletic career and all of this outdoor activity do for you personally?
Yeah. Well, I think that the impact on me as a person was on a few different levels. I think that without a doubt, one of those areas of impact was just with regards to physical ability and independence. A good example of that is that once you make the U.S. team, you... especially for young people, like if you're a teenager, kind of an up-and-comer, a great lesson learned along the way is that most teenagers with disabilities will be used to having people like help them with their bags. And once you make the team, it becomes very apparent very quickly that no one's going to do that for you. So you have to figure out a way to travel internationally with all your gear and move it independently. So if you're checked in at the airport and you're flight is leaving out of gate A10, and gate A10 is like way down five different hallways, you have to figure out how to get there on your own. And there are definitely ways to do it, and that's the beauty of it, is that you learn all the tricks of the trade from your teammates. And but there's that really good positive peer pressure to be independent. So I think that was a really huge area of impact. And then I think the other big area is just what sports does for every athlete, which is really elements of just self-confidence and standing up for yourself, and knowing that you put the time in to be there and be the best that you can be, and having faith and confidence in that. But that's not just Paralympic sport; that's any sport.
So you've obviously you and people like you have obviously proven that there's a lot that you can do, and you can be an elite athlete, you can be a professional athlete, you can get outdoors, you can be active. But were there ever moments where you wished that you had the whole range of opportunities where you said, hey, I wish I could go skiing, or I wish I could climb to the top of that mountain, or go backpacking, or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yes, and there have definitely been times in which, there are moments on a daily basis where even as well as we do to optimize those environments and be athletes and get out there, there are still, you know, environmental barriers that we run into daily. And some of them are just small things like a restaurant that has one step to get inside that, you know, be so easy to put just a little ramp there that would make it so that everyone was welcome. But it doesn't happen. Maybe because of ignorance, maybe because of unwillingness. It's hard to say. So that's kind of the day-to-day piece. And then, you know, more broadly speaking, especially with regards to like the natural environment, I think that certainly that's something that I've often wished would be a bit more fluid and easy to access. You know, knowing great people out there, knowing people who have definitely pushed the boundaries in that regard, I have a pretty good sense that it's still quite possible. There are a lot of people who, you know, my main sport was a road-based sport, you know, on pavement mostly, by definition, but have some great friends who have done phenomenal things in accessing the natural environment as well, with regards to, you know, off-road wheelchairs, you know, adapted mountain biking, even things as simple as putting, you know, they've had these great mats now that you can put onto a beach. So essentially, sand is really hard for a wheelchair user, but they make these mats that you can just roll out onto the beach that basically, you know, it overlies the sand so that you can actually roll out onto the beach and then get to the water. So there's yet again ways to adapt the environment. And it's all a matter of where you want to invest your time and energy. And so, you know, I know in the back of my head that if I ever wanted to make it a big goal to do a big hike or get to the top of some mountain, I probably could. It just would, you know, require a little bit of time and energy. But yeah, I mean, that's always something that's a little bit bittersweet, I think.
Well, and it's something that gets talked about from time to time because, you know, you'll hear about questions of, okay, should we make this part of a national park? Should we make a paved path here? And there's often pushback where people say, no, you should have to hike in. You should have to be rugged and kind of, no, we don't want to pave over this area. What do arguments like that make you think?
Well, yeah. I think that's a healthy debate. And I think that the ideal solution is giving people options because, you know, you certainly don't want to pave all of nature, right? Like that wouldn't be the right thing to do. But yet you also want to open up nature to everyone in some regard. And so I think having a happy medium of places that are that can be accessed by people with a variety of disabilities is really important. While at the same time leaving a lot of areas untouched is also really important. Because even if you look at the disability community, there will be a variety of opinions. There will be people who say, no, I want like an easy, flat loop trail that I can do in 20 minutes that I don't feel exertion at all. And some people will be like, no, it's way too easy. Like, give me some access, but not too much because I want it to be a challenge. And then some people will say, no, forget it. I just give me an off-road chair and I'll go wherever I want, but don't change the environment at all. So, you know, even within the community, there'll be varied opinions. So having a sampling of that, I think, is best for everybody.
That was Paralympic wheelchair racer Sherry Blauwett. She lives in Boston, and she teaches at Harvard Medical School and practices sports medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital. If you want to see what wheelchair racing looks like, we've got a video on our website, outthereshow.com, and there are photos of Sherry on that site as well. That's it for this episode of Out There. We'll have a new show the second Thursday of every month. If you haven't done so yet, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. And if you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review. We're hoping for 5 stars. Our website is outthereshow.com. If you have an idea for a story or interview, or you'd like to submit something you wrote, you can do so there.
You can also follow me on Twitter at Willow Belden. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.